Good afternoon. We'll open the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness. Today's date, Tuesday, April 9th. Thank you all for being here. We have, as you can see, public hearing, possible work sessions. We are under the deadlines of the House, of course, you know, originating chambers. Those folks in the building, you're aware of those things. Some folks from outside might not understand how fast things can move, but let me tell you, they can just soar pretty quickly in this building. Not necessarily out of this committee, but other committees as well. With that, with respect, do we have somebody needs to testify early and get them on the way? We will. I'll open up a public hearing on HCR 24. Ms. Edwards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 24 has a no revenue impact statement, no fiscal impact statement, and no subsequent referral, and it supports ongoing judicial initiatives to create a veterans treatment court in all Oregon judicial courts. It would encourage Oregon veterans to volunteer as mentors through the local veterans treatment courts.
Great, and I think we'll call up for the first panel, Judge Vance Day, please, and Gary Cohen. And Brian Oreo, I think, will join you as well. Thank you all for being here. Gentlemen, good to see you. And you know the routine. If you'll just state your names for the record, and you can go in any order that you're comfortable with. And again, thank you for being here today.
Vance Day.
Brian Oreo.
Gary Cohen.
Chairman Matthews, honored committee members. My name is Vance Day. I have the honor of serving as the people of Oregon as a circuit court judge in the 3rd Judicial District. That's Marion County. I appear before you in support of House Concurrent Resolution 24. I'm the presiding judge over what's become known as the Marion County Veterans Treatment Docket. We call it a docket because we're all volunteers. We do it within our existing budgets. We don't use any other funds. And we've cobbled together an association from Marion County Health, Sheriff's Department, a variety of other organizations, including the Oregon Army National Guard, as well as the Veterans Administration, and we stay within budget constraints because we don't have any extra money. When we do, hopefully, when funding is appropriate at some point in time in the future, we'll begin calling it a court. Beside me is Deputy District Attorney Brian Oreo, who volunteers as the Deputy District Attorney to work within our court, and on my other side is Gary Cohen, who's a 24-year Air Force veteran, and he's our court coordinator. The House resolution is pretty straightforward. We urge its passage, but let me just give you briefly just one point of savings. We did a quick calculation on the 12 folks that we serve, veterans who were involved or brought into the criminal justice system for nonviolent crimes, and looked at just three of them, the first three that we brought in, to see what the savings was to the county as well as the state. And just the treatment that they received through the Veterans Administration was over $45,000 in a three-month period. And you take that and you times that and multiply it by the number of veterans that are out there who suffer from PTSD, traumatic brain injury, alcoholism, or some type of service-connected problem who get swept into the criminal justice system. And the bottom line is these type of courts work, these type of courts save money, and these type of courts dispense compassion. Sun Tzu was an ancient Chinese military general, strategist, and philosopher. I know many of us in politics, of course I'm formally involved in politics, but are familiar with him. He employed his commanders to as follows: regard your soldiers as your children, and they will follow you unto the deepest valleys. Look on them as your beloved sons, and they will stand by you even unto death. The veterans of our military service have put their lives on the line, and we may have the freedoms that we enjoy. And they have dedicated their lives to our country, and they deserve our commitment and our recognition at the deepest levels. So we urge passage.
Mr. Oreo?
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Brian Oreo. I'm a deputy district attorney here in Marion County. I volunteered on this project to create a veterans treatment docket here in Marion County. In the course of the last 18 months, I've not only seen how the veterans treatment docket does honor those who have honored us by serving this country, how it does save money by accessing treatment resources that are not available through Marion County probation and parole, But I think even more importantly is that it promotes community safety by reducing recidivism. The efforts that we've made in some of these cases have shown clearly the difference between a traditional path into the prison system or the probation system with young men and women who are at high risk. I can think of one young gentleman in particular who served this country valiantly in the Middle East, suffered some serious physical injuries, became opiate addicted, and was ultimately arrested for delivery of heroin within 1,000 feet of a school. The traditional path of that prosecution would ordinarily be prison. This young man was suffering from severe post-traumatic stress disorder, opiate addiction, and I can only imagine what would have happened to him had I pursued a traditional path of incarceration in the prison system. Instead, we endeavored to refer him to psychiatric and treatment through the VA administration that is not available through Marion County Probation and Parole. Certainly not the specialization nor the resources. And as I sit here today, that young man is clean, sober, law-abiding member of the community, getting straight A's at a local community college. And it is nothing short of miraculous what has happened in his life, and absolutely nightmarish to think about what would have happened had he gone to prison. That being said, I am a deputy district attorney. I am very, very much committed to public safety when incarceration demands that. But I think by balancing the treatment needs of these young men and women with the resources available through the Veterans Administration, we can actually promote public safety by pursuing a veterans treatment docket in their cases. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Sir?
Hi, I'm Gary Cohen. I became involved in the docket before it was a docket. We had an individual in the jail, a young man, and he was incarcerated for domestic violence charge. We got to hear his story. He was a combat medic in Iraq. I don't know if I can't even imagine. He told me stories, if you can put your head in his place. But he saw and heard and smelled things that none of us hope will ever have to encounter in our lives. He was having a very difficult time. As far as he was concerned, at the time of this incident, the Iraqis were coming through the windows in his home. He was trying to protect his wife and his children. He got out a gun. He never threatened his family, but his wife was scared and concerned, called law enforcement, and this is where we ended up. Didn't know quite what to do at the time, and I was fortunate enough at that time to partner with Alon Lampert, who at the time was an Oregon Partners in Crisis.
Partnership for Veterans at Risk.
Okay. And we partnered up with Judge Ochoa and managed to talk this thing through. The gentleman got out of jail. He's finishing school right now. He's quite successful. He's gone to other veterans groups to help them out. And him serving any time would have been no value to anyone. In a general sense, things have, in my take on things have improved as far as the outlook on the military and the civilian community in our country. We don't spit on people anymore because they're on uniform. We do say thank you for your service. In my eyes, that's wonderful, but it's kind of like a BS line at a beauty contest. We need to start showing these people that they did the job. They met the call, and this is one element of many things that needs to happen to make it right. They did it for us. We need to do it for them. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you all. And nice to see our judges and Deputy DA shoulder to shoulder on the issue, and thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate that. If you don't mind, Judge, you have time for questions just real quick? If we can.
You bet.
Are there questions from the panel? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Judge Day, it's wonderful seeing you. Thanks for coming in, and particularly on this topic. Can you tell me, because we've dealt with this in past sessions, And you know how it is. You pass a bill and people go off and write rules and take care of it. And I know we've had testimony in the past. How extensive is this being done throughout Oregon? Or was it predominantly a Marion County pilot program that we did?
The first court was started in Klamath County, and it is fully functioning. It's a small court because of the amount of folks in that area. The population doesn't justify a full-time court. Marion County is the first large county to try this. And so currently we have a docket between 12 and 15 veterans. We've applied for federal grant funds. If we receive the funds, we'll expand that court up to 60 individuals. We'll meet weekly, and it will be quite large, and that will be kind of the test pilot. Right now, there aren't any state funds that are available, so that's why we're operating within the docket system rather than the court system. The unique thing about a veterans treatment docket is that it adds not only the time honored and trusted and surefire way of dealing with people who are, you know, addicted to drugs and alcohol or have PTSD, that's the drug court model, but we add a mentor to that. And that is one of the things that this resolution does, is it encourages folks to join our courts and become mentors. So what we hope to do with this is to kind of shop it around after it's passed, hopefully, and go throughout the state, encourage other judges and other counties to do this same program. I'll volunteer my time. I know Mr. Oreo and others will do the same to help train other folks so we can start these programs. And by the time the legislature, we're in a better economy, we can fund them, we'll have the pilot programs already there, and they'll be up and running. That's our hope.
Great. Thanks.
Does that answer your question,
Representative? Yes.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a good model. We find it very helpful in my district for drug courts, family courts, and I've just been really impressed. I followed one court, well, it was a drug court, one of the first ones, on through their graduation, and you know, keep up with the judges and see how things are going, because we meet with our judges regularly. But this is kind of like, reminds me of the relief nurseries in the children's sector. So I think I would be very happy to support this, and I hope you can put one in Clatsop and Tillamook too.
Yes.
I think you have answered my question in your last comments, because I was, when I was reading through this before the hearing, I thought, this sounds like a great idea. Why are we just doing a resolution and not, you know, drafting something that, you know, directs courts to set this up or sets up a pilot program? But it sounds like this is kind of a first step in maybe what will be ultimately, you know, Klamath and Marion are successful in kind of creating a model. So this is kind of just getting it on the map as a recognition. Is that kind of the reason that we went with kind of a resolution as opposed to something that actually has a little bit of teeth?
That's correct, Representative Fagan. And I think if I was taking the official line, we'd like you to fully fund the courts first and
right.
then get the veterans court. that's all I can
say. Duly noted.
Any further questions from the panel? I just want to say thank you. And to anybody out there who might be listening, we have a huge viewing audience that follows us. But whenever you try to tackle these issues, you know, from our position, folks want to jump to the conclusion we're trying to be soft on crime, we're trying to give somebody a pass. That's not the situation at all. What we're trying to do is create some sideboards in the discretion model that says we're going to recognize that there's some other influences on these individuals that might be the driving figure for the recidivism of our veterans. And I just want to applaud your effort and just say thank you. And I look forward to continued success in this sprawling throughout the state. And I hope Multnomah County, and I believe Multnomah County is reviewing this now.
They are.
And I'd love to see that happen in the new courthouse that's right there in Rockwood in my district. So we're hoping to do that. But again, thanks for taking the time today. I know you're busy. I know you all are. And it's very meaningful. So thank you so much for your testimony today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Our intent is to move this quickly. Thank you. And next up we'll have Mr. Robert Thornhill. Mr. Thornhill, welcome. Great to see you again.
Thank you for the welcome.
Absolutely, sir. Glad you had safe travels to the Capitol and hopefully safe drive home. If you know the routine, sir.
Okay, for the record, my name is Robert Thornhill. I live in Beaverton, Oregon. I'm testifying in support of HCR 24 on behalf of Oregon VFW District 3 and its five VFW posts in Portland. I've submitted written testimony. With your permission, I'd like to read a summary of that testimony. But before I do that, I'd like to introduce the gentleman who is accompanying me. He's the elected official, 15 terms as the commander of Post 1442 in Oregon. He's an old tin can sailor, four stacker from the Asiatic Fleet. He was there when it started. He was there when it ended. I'm honored to be able to speak for him.
Well, thank you, sir. And if he'd like to join you at the dais, even if he wants to just sit with you side by side, we're happy to have you shoulder to shoulder. Sir?
I'm not a good speaker, so.
Thank you for your service. That'll be fine. You can witness this wonderful testimony like all of us.
And he's got my back.
Wonderful.
Thank you. It suggests that we people owe it to those who answered the call to arms to cope with the physical and mental trauma of their service. Veterans courts are one way of doing that. I'll not elaborate here on the proven effectiveness of the hundreds of veterans courts operating across this nation. Though not mentioned in HCR 24, veterans courts have beneficial impacts in addition to helping veterans themselves. First, where involved is the impact on the family. I suspect you've heard it said, those who wait also serve. I suggest no less true for those who wait while their veteran serve time in prison for a nonviolent offense, which may be attributable in part to the veteran's service to his or her nation. Except in the first instance, the family, along with their soldier, may serve with pride. Whereas in the second, perhaps they wait with shame as their former soldier served time in prison, bearing the stigma of being a convict. We owe, I think, the benefits of veterans courts to the veteran's family as much as to the veteran himself or herself. Second is the fiscal impact of veterans courts. Veterans courts are an investment. The VA estimates there are $3.36 savings for each $1 invested in veterans courts. Even without those savings, in our view, the troubled veteran is worth the investment in veterans courts. I do not know how the VA arrived at the savings figure. However, the savings could be even greater here in Oregon. The Department of Corrections reports that it costs $85 a day or $31,025 per annum to incarcerate an individual in the Oregon State Prison System. Thus, every veteran salvaged, so to speak, as opposed to being in prison, is a cost avoidance of $31,000 plus a year. The money can be more spent productively on more urgent needs, such as K-12 education of our children, our future, or invested in increased staff for the VA to care for returning veterans. In advocating for veterans courts, please understand that we do not wish to not hold veterans accountable for their actions. We think they must be held accountable, but we also owe it to them to try to recover, rehabilitate themselves, and become productive citizens. So it is requested that this committee approve HCR 24. And with that, thank you for hearing me out. And on behalf of the veterans of District 3 and their families, we thank you, as always, for all the good things you do down here in Salem.
Thank you, sir.
I'll try to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Thornhill, and thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your service, sir. Questions of Mr. Thornhill? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a safe travel, sir. Was there anybody else here to testify on HCR 24? Sir, I believe you were interested in testifying on House Bill 3402.
Oh, okay.
So,
I thought this was a direct license one.
No, sir.
Okay, I apologize.
Thank you. Anybody else here to testify on HCR 24? Wonderful. I will close the public hearing on HCR 24. And with that, I will open a work session on HCR 24.
Chair Matthews, I move HCR 24 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Parrish moves HCR 24 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any discussion? Seeing none, Ms. Craig, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Booth?
Aye.
Representative Espinel?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative Wood?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Parrish?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. The motion passes. HCR 24 is adopted. And we will need to assign a carrier for the measure. Anybody like to carry HCR 24? Representative Boone?
Sure.
We'd be honored. Thank you. And again, thanks to all for testifying on behalf of HCR 24, and thank you for your work. Thank the judge and, of course, our DA as well, our deputy DA. Thank you very much. And we will move on. And my intent, and I'll be clear on my intent, I'm going to open up a very brief public hearing on House Bill 3402. And Ms. Edwards, if you will.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3402 has a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. It has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. This bill was previously heard on April 2nd. It deems the application or renewal of a driver's license, driver's permit, or identification card as consent with the Selective Service System if the applicant otherwise is required by federal law to register. It requires ODOT to place notice of deemed consent to register with the SSS on the application and instructs ODOT to adopt rules for the implementation of the program.
Thank you. And so I'm choosing to open up a public hearing. We have somebody who would like to provide testimony today. And so I would like to please invite Mr. Johnston, if you will. And Mr. Johnston, this is somewhat rare since we've already heard this bill in a public hearing.
Right.
But out of respect for the process and hearing voice, I want you to be able to share your either favor or opposed. Now, but let me just share this. You and I also have a little bit of a past history on an event, and I want you to keep your comments germane to the bill.
Right.
I want to be clear. If they're not germane to the bill, we will be done, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Your complaint, but I don't comply on that one, but that's acceptable. But anyhow, dealing with this bill, I'm concerned because people have the right to travel.
The name for the record, sir?
Oh, excuse me. My straw man account is Edward Johnston. But the thing that gets to me about it, we have a right to travel, and the frustration that gets to me if we're opening up to allow other people that are abusing our constitutional rights is what concerns me. And, you know, that's the one thing that we forget about this country. We are a republic, and we need to get back to our grassroots of teaching responsibility in these things instead of just fighting them over. It really horrifies me because this bill could be, of course, illegals getting licensed, and illegals under our Constitution and treaties don't have these rights, and by extending these rights, we are opening up our communities in our town to possibly other acts of terrorism from foreigners, and we've really got to look at that instead of just writing these incidents off as local instead of what, where their former country is and where they came from. So you doing that and registering that, you're violating legal Americans' rights of free travel. And so if people don't want to comply on that, there should be a deal on that for people's rights on that point. So that's what I like to bring up because we forget about people's rights and we want to do administrative rules and over people on their straw man accounts.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And just for the record, the bill actually provides certain persons who apply for a driver's license, driver's permit, or ID card be deemed to have consented to a registration with Selective Service System.
Right, I understand that, too, we have a right to on that not everybody has to do that. It is a right that we have constitutional rights, and that should not be a barrier against somebody's right to travel.
Duly noted, sir. Thank you, sir, for your testimony today. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Johnston?
Oh, yeah.
Thank
Sorry
you, sir.
That.
That's okay. That's okay. Have a great day, sir.
You too.
Thank you. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3402. And open a work session on House Bill 3402.
Chair Matthews, I move House Bill 3402 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Great. Representative Fagan moves House Bill 3402 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? Representative Witt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I find myself in the odd position on this bill of opposing it simply because it is It is a mandatory registration. And were it optional, I would have absolutely no problem with the bill whatsoever. But we have received testimony from Major Evans, Paul Evans, here a couple of 3 weeks ago, where he pointed out that I think, as we all know, we have a volunteer armed forces at this point. It was Mr. Evans' opinion that we would continue to have a volunteer armed forces in this country. And quite frankly, I don't know why it is that we continue to maintain this infrastructure. It's costly in both monetary as well as other ways. And unfortunately, because of its mandatory nature, I'm going to have to oppose the bill, Mr. Chairman.
I appreciate that. Respect that very much. Thank you, Representative Witten. Representative Escobel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, grapple with this bill. You're supposed to go down. It's your duty to go down and register for Selective Service. Otherwise, you lose benefits, is my understanding. Why do we, as a government, have to go out and make people do something and then they don't have the consequences of not doing what they're supposed to do in the first place? That's where I'm coming from on this. I just think rewarding, it's kind of like rewarding bad behavior. Well, you can't do it, so we're going to do it for you. I disagree with that, because I think that everyone should, if they want to get benefits from work for the government, if they want to get benefits in school or whatever, then by golly, they should pay attention to what they're doing. And they're told every senior graduating out of school or in school and high school knows you have to do that when you're 18. So I'll probably be a no.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Yes, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question just for clarification. I mean, I think Representative Witt brought it up. You're required to register, but isn't it at age 18? So this was... be an automatic registration at 16, or assuming you get your license at 16.
Ms. Edwards, did you want to tackle that? I think it's my impression that what this is you're expressing consent to have applied once you file for the driver's license if you should fail to fill out the card at a later date when you're 18.
But you, so just for clarification, then it's already done then, basically.
That
so,
point.
Got it. Okay. All right. That's good. Thanks.
Was I correct in that?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And you know, I certainly hope that what Mr. Evans testified to is correct. I hope that we continue to be an all-volunteer, armed forces, and we're not engaged in draft. I really do. I think we all hope that that's the case. But I also worry that, you know, we're on deploying folks 4, 5, and 6 times. The more that we fall into that pattern, then, you know, the harder it's going to be for folks to get the support they need to go sign on that dotted line. So I respect the comments greatly and respect the committee greatly, and not trying to tear the committee in half on this. I really do respect your opinions on this. And with that, I'll ask, is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Ms. Craig, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Booth?
Aye.
Representative Escobar?
No.
Representative Hudson?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
No.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Chair
Aye. The motion passes. And that will head down to Ways and Means by prior reference. And thank you all and appreciate the discussion. And with that, we'll open up a public hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 1.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Joint Memorial 1 has a no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no subsequent referral. It urges Congress to develop means of disclosure to states where persons convicted of sex crimes in military courts plan to reside.
Great. Thank you. And we have nobody signed up to provide public testimony on SJM 1.
Oh, SJM
1. That's odd.
What's that?
Whose bill is it? And that came out of the Senate and came from the Senate. Could you just kind of refresh your memory on?
Yes, sir. It came from the Senate. It was voted out of the Senate Veterans Committee three ayes, no nays, and one excused, with Senator Courtney excused, and it was voted out of the Senate on the floor, 26 ayes, zero nays, and four excused. Senators Bates, Johnson, Monroe, and Roblin.
Okay. Anybody like to testify on Senate Joint Memorial 1? Well, gosh, General Caldwell.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to go out there and kind of act like I knew what I was talking about?
Somebody, that'd be great. Just read this background, sir, and get your testimony. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director at the Military Department, and I drew the short straw back in the back row, so...
I saw the head nodding going like, I appreciate it.
I'll just tell you, I did sit through the Senate committee hearing on this, and I think the general discussion was along the lines that, indeed, there are examples where military members have been tried and found and convicted in military courts and, you know, all over the United States or the world, for that matter, and then they're discharged, they come back, and there's no record that follows them back. Whereas in Oregon, where you have a certain crime listed in these, in this particular genre of crimes, then there is a registry. So I think it was trying to tie some the essence of the discussion. I didn't testify; I listened. But the essence of that discussion was to try to tie these dots, connect these dots, so we don't have this gap. Seemed fairly logical to me when I was sitting in the back of the room, and made, you know, I think pretty good sense, because we're making a big effort, I know, in this state to ensure that the public knows where these folks are when they've committed these certain kinds of crimes. And so with that, I think it's probably just a good piece of legislation that kind of wraps in these disparate parts. I think it's a fairly small number, but nonetheless, it's there. So that was kind of the general sense.
Thank you, sir. And it's a small number, but if that number's your next-door neighbor and you're not aware of it,
that's
you
correct.
Want to be aware. So
particularly
I appreciate
you, yeah.
that, sir. And I'm surprised, too, that they didn't come over with testimony from somebody, but I appreciate that. They're, again, having the committees at the same time, sometimes that's difficult to manage. So I appreciate that. And thanks for the insight, sir.
Yes, sir.
And you'll notice also in the measure summary there's a background regarding basically what the general just had testified to. So it doesn't seem to me like a real complicated ask. I think it's a bill that makes sense, and given transparency in terms of reporting with potential sex offenders in the registration system, seemed logical, which is why we wanted to bring the bill forward. Yes.
Mr. Chair, while you're looking at it there, does the summary, does the memorial spell out who Congress or the military would need to report to at the state level, and is all that stuff in there, or is it just aspirational?
Well, let me pull it up for you really quick, sir, because I don't know the answer to that. But what I can tell you is this is up for a possible work session, but I think it's best, given it's a Senate bill and we're not under the tight timeline, it's dealing with sex offender registration.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would make perfect sense to just, you know, assume we've had a public hearing today, do a little bit of work on our end. I know that Ms. Edwards and myself can look into this matter further and bring everybody up to speed on a level of comfort on moving something forward that deals with sex offender registration, so that we don't feel we're under a tight timeline. So we'll just put that on our notes of things to do as we meet tomorrow, and we will figure that out. Is there anybody else that would like to be pulled up to testify on Senate Joint Memorial 1? And any other comments from the committee before we close the public hearing?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir, Representative.
Thank you. I just, if recollection serves me correctly, we have had testimony in this committee in past sessions that sexual trauma is pervasive. I think that the numbers were in excess of a third of many of our women service people, and this is a kind of crime that I think just begs to have it addressed, as this memorial tries to do. So I'm pleased that we're dealing with it.
Thank you, and I think the manner in which we'll deal with it, rather than hurry it, we have maybe a little prolonged dialogue so that we can really, truly know exactly what we're going to do and what might need to be done in the future. Representative Escobar.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe now we have in place with the state police a
system where you can go online if you live in a neighborhood and take a radius around your house or your neighborhood or whatever. You can find any sex crime that has been committed by the individuals that are residing within your area. I assume that this would go into the same system?
I believe that's true. And it'll fall into the same categories as crime, I think, is the intent. So the crimes that are currently under that umbrella for the state of Oregon would be disclosed for the registry. So
we have the infrastructure in place.
That's correct, sir. And I really think it is rather simple.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that there will be a volume of folks. I think that there will be a few. It's unfortunate. We speak a great deal of pride about our servicemen and women, and should. But there are there is that element of human error, and folks can make some bad decisions. And so if they do in this realm, we want to be aware of it at the state level. With that, if there's no further comments, I will close the public hearing on SJM 1. And thank you for that. And open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 124.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 124 has a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. There is a subsequent referral to the Judiciary Committee. We have a note from the Speaker to rescind that subsequent referral. And the bill requires courts to consider a defendant's service member's status at sentencing. It declares an emergency and is effective upon passage.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. And just to refresh my own memory and for the committee, the subsequent referral to Judiciary also was part of the Senate bill originally next door. And they've already vetted it through their Senate Veterans Committee and through Judiciary. So the Speaker agreed to have that removed on this end of things. And with that, do we have anybody signed up to testify? Jess Barton? How are you, sir?
Fine, thank you.
Great. Welcome to your capital. And if you'll state your name for the record, you can begin your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jesse Barton. I'm an Army veteran. I'm an adjunct instructor of criminal justice at Western Oregon University. I'm in private practice as an attorney here in Salem. And I'm a member of the executive committee of the Oregon State Bar's Military Assistance Panel. And I guess it's actually from the Oregon State Bar where this bill comes from. What this bill is attempting to do in a different sort of way in comparison to the bill you heard earlier regarding the veterans treatment courts, is to put in place a system that ensures that, or attempts to ensure that these what I call veteran defendant cases are properly handled in the criminal justice system. I want to just use as a quick example that District Attorney Brian Oreo used. He talked about a guy that was charged with, I think, distributing heroin within 1,000 feet of a school. Now, he was processed through the Veteran Treatment Court in Marion County, so he didn't get sentenced, which is what Senate Bill 124 addresses, sentencing of veteran defendants. That was fortunate because that particular veteran was in Marion County, where there is a Veteran Treatment Court. He was in one of the 34 counties in this state that do not have veteran treatment courts. He might have very well ended up convicted and then sentenced. And under the state's felony sentencing guidelines, he would have served it. He would have been facing a minimum of 16 months in prison. But with Senate Bill 124 in place, that would ensure that there's could be consideration of the person's military service as a mitigating factor in the same fashion that it was considered in the veterans treatment court concept or setting in Marion County. That could happen in any county under Senate Bill 124, and would enable the judge, if the defense attorney establishes substantial and compelling reasons, the judge could then, instead of imposing a 16-month term of imprisonment, the judge could impose some other form of sentence, such as a probationary sentence of typically would be 3 years with various sorts of treatment options that would be packaged up by a defense attorney who's actually doing his job. The defense attorney would package up a treatment program that would satisfy the court that the probationary sentence is more appropriate, is a sentence that's the appropriate sentence for this particular veteran defendant. And so that's what Senate Bill 124 is designed to do. It's to ensure that judges have this legal authority to impose, other than, for example, prison sentences in veteran defendant cases, by establishing or clarifying that there's this mitigating factor that service member status can be used to establish a mitigating factor to avoid prison and instead impose a sentence of, for example, probation. I just wanted to mention one thing, though, or actually two things, and to try to set in place the acuteness of the problem. One of my colleagues at Western Oregon University, Dr. William Brown, heads up an organization called the Pacific Policy and Research Institute. In 2007, he worked in conjunction with the Marion County Jail to do a study of jail inmate demographics. At that time, about 5.5% of the jails of the inmate population was veteran. They did a second study in 2011, and the percentage had increased to over 9.8%. So roughly the percentage of, in percentage terms, the veteran population increased by almost 80% over that four-year period. In my written materials, which I previously submitted, I mentioned the fact that some years back, Congress established something called the Veteran Justice Outreach Program. And one of the things that that program does is assists local jurisdictions in establishing veteran treatment courts, and that's actually how the veteran treatment court was established in Klamath County, and that's actually where Judge Day is going to try to get funding to establish a full-blown veteran treatment court here in Marion County. But another thing that exists under the Veteran Justice Outreach Program is to establish the creation of these positions called Veteran Justice Outreach Specialists. These people work with defense attorneys, judges, district attorneys, whoever, on veteran defendant cases. When that Veteran Justice Outreach Program was first established, Oregon had 1/4 FTE in terms of a Veteran Justice Outreach Specialist, a woman by the name of Belinda Matty that works out at the VA regional office in Portland. So when she started in that position, her job was 1/4 time. Since then, after a while, the size of her job grew so much that she became full-time in that position. And now there's actually 2 full-time Veteran Justice Outreach Specialists at the Portland VA Medical Center because there's the need for 2. They could probably have 5 or 6 and keep them all very busy. It really is a problem. And that what our intention here is to try to reduce the number of veterans that wind up in the prison system, for example, to put into treatment programs instead. And Senate Bill 124 won't get us there entirely, but it'll help. One last thing I want to say, and as an attorney, I'm actually a criminal defense attorney by practice. I've been a member of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association for the past, going on 23 years. The first line of defense, so to speak, in this area is going to rest with the defense bar. It's the defense bar that needs to do the job to find out when they represent a veteran, and when they do, if it's the type of case where Senate Bill 124 would be applicable, and then to put together the case so the judge can make a determination that the case, that person's service member status, substantially and compellingly warrants mitigation in the form of, for example, probation instead of imprisonment. I think that's all I wanted to say, Mr. Chairman. I'm, of course, happy to answer any question your committee might have.
No, thank you for that. And as you say, substantially and compelling reasons to be considered, and that's not a clear path, and I appreciate your testimony. This does not give anybody a free ride or a get-out-of-jail-free card. It certainly just simply says they'll take into consideration some of those service
levels. That's correct,
thank
Mr.
You, Chairman. Questions? Yes, Representative Escobar.
Representative Witt and I were having a little sidebar here on this issue. We recall, because, you know, we're kind of old and we don't remember very much, but we recall a bill in the past that was similar to this, that there was due consideration of the fact that the individual was from the military, from a combat zone, and been released to account for certain issues that a veteran may face that the public wouldn't face. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, and Representative Witt, that's absolutely correct. Actually, this bill is an offshoot of a bill that I've actually been working on this bill for 4 or 5 years.
Sure.
I had a bill in 2009 that had two parts. The first part was to enhance district attorney authority to divert veteran defendant cases from criminal prosecution. The second part was this mitigating factor part that's before you today. Senate Bill 999, the legislature passed in 2010 during that supplemental session. So that's the bill that enlarged district attorney diversion authority that Mr. Oreo actually has used in some cases. And actually, Senate Bill 999 is used as a sort of the foundation for how the veteran treatment court in Marion County works. They sort of fashion, well, what kind of cases can come into this court? Well, they said, well, as a starting point, Senate Bill 999 cases. So that part's been done. It was done 3 years ago. Now here's the other part. Part that will capture the kind of cases that don't go into a veteran treatment court or don't get diverted under Senate Bill 999. Some cases will still go through and will wind up with convictions. So the question is well, the guy's going to have a conviction, so he's not going to get a free pass. The question then is what should be the appropriate disposition? And if substantial compelling reasons can be established and the disposition might be probation instead of, for example, 16 months in prison for the person that represented our District Attorney Oreo was talking about.
Your memory serves you well, sir.
Occasionally, I get lucky.
Yeah, unlike me, who recalls every bit of the conversation, but just assume the Senate didn't pass it.
Wow, remember
I joke with my chair in the Senate. Chair Boquist does a great job for us with veterans issues. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Thanks for taking the time.
Chairman.
Appreciate it. And thank you for your service as well, sir. Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to provide testimony on Senate Bill 124? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 124. And I think what we'll do is we'll hold that till next meeting. We'll give folks. I think my desire would be, as a chair, we'll just. I don't know that we'll get a whole lot of more information on this issue, but again, dealing with the veterans courts, we'll. We'll perhaps post a work session for Thursday, if that's okay, or I guess the next available work session day, which would be
Thursday.
So I can carry this over?
You can carry a work session over.
Okay, so we will carry the work session over till Thursday. Is that correct? So we'll post Senate Bill 124 and carry it over as work session till on Thursday. Perfect. Thank you, Ms. Edwards. Keeps me straight. What will we do without her? I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. And with that, we'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 32. Ms. Edwards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 32 has a no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no subsequent referral. It establishes the Oregon Code of Military Justice governing state militia. It declares emergency and is effective upon passage.
Thank you. And with that, we'll call up Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. For those of you that have not met the general, great to see you again, sir.
I actually signed up for this one, so.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Military Department, and today is before you is Senate Bill 32. We, the department asked for this bill to be submitted to this legislative session in order to do some essentially housekeeping. And our what is typically referred to on the active duty side is the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
UCMJ.
We have had this code in our statutory language for about 25, 30 years now, and it's called the Oregon Code of Military Justice, and it basically is designed to try to mirror as much as closely as possible the Uniform Code of Military Justice for the similar type actions and regulations and how we want to govern by our military courts inside of the Oregon National Guard. This is a regulatory-based code as opposed to typically in an Oregon Revised Statute or court setting. It's differently. Obviously, the courts are different. So we've tried to, as things have changed, not only in the Oregon codes or Oregon Revised Statutes and deal with a lot of things outside the military, so have things changed inside the Uniform Code. So we're trying to continually upgrade it and get it to a situation where we can actually do regulations instead of having to come down here every time something changes and go through this process. So that's really the significant part of this. This particular rewrite or this particular legislation eliminates punitive statuses, which are now part of the Oregon Code of Military Justice. It clarifies jurisdictional supremacy as well, which is very important to us because in most cases where an individual is involved in outside of our network, but maybe under our jurisdiction, criminal activity outside in the general public, then we defer to the local prosecutor and the state courts to deal with that. And then after that adjudication has been completed, then they'll come back in and fall back under perhaps our uniform code, and therefore we can take action in addition to, depending on what the civilian courts have done. So that's always important to us that the civilian courts have supremacy. Does some clarification, eliminates some statutory statutes of limitations, and defers to the Oregon Code of Military Justice statute of limitations for military prosecution, which is, again, right out of the Uniform Code. Got several minor issues that, basically trying to make sure that, for instance, we have an example under the jurisdiction, jurisdiction issues. And for example, if a drug abuse occurs, one of our soldiers outside of the military duty status, let's say the soldier ingests illegal drugs while in a civilian status, but returns to our organization and produces a positive test for that drug, then we have the ability under this code to take action, because we have our regulations that don't allow that. And I know there's a lot of talk around here about the marijuana use right now. There was a hearing here last week with an Oregon National Guard soldier, made lots of good TV about his desire to use marijuana to take care of his PTSD. Well, that being the case, and wanting the state courts to allow that, still doesn't make it legal in our system. The state of Oregon may say you can do that, but yet he has regulatory, not judicial or statutory, but regulatory issues inside of this code that we would take action against that individual, as an example, if he did produce a positive urine analysis. Also, there's been some examples in the past where perhaps a soldier would, during duty, see something that later on in a non-duty status come back into the armory or come back into some military post and steal something. Well, it really, the whole thing started because he had knowledge when he was under the code. Now, we have the option then, of course, we would prefer the civilian authorities take care of it, but then at the same time, we can come back and get another bite at the apple after the fact under this code. So it's really essentially housekeeping and trying to keep it relevant with what's going on at the federal level, and also trying to keep it relevant with what's going on inside the Oregon revised statutes. So that's pretty much the the scope on it. It's certainly not a major shift. It's more just fixing what we got right now. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for the general? Yes, Representative Escobar.
So, general, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, general, the Oregon Code is a mirror of the UCMJ?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Escobar, it's not 100% mirror, no. It's very close. For example, we're all familiar that have served the infamous Article 15, which is non-judicial punishment is what that means. It's more like going to the Justice of the Peace for a traffic violation. All commanders have that ability. In the Oregon Code of Military Justice, we mirror those same offenses that the Uniform Code does, but it's in the Oregon Code, and it is under Article 15 of our code. So we can kind of keep consistency, if you can know what I mean. But since we don't fall under the Uniform Code of Military Justice while under the command of the governor, then we had to have some tool that basically mirrors what these men and women have been taught in their training of what their responsibilities are, but at the same time has to be Oregon's version.
Mr. Chair, just for everyone's, as you know, of being a veteran, and the veterans on this committee know, it's the only time that you can be tried twice for the same crime is when you're in the military. You can be tried by the military and the civilian.
That's entirely correct in this situation, yeah.
And completely avoidable.
Correct.
Completely avoidable. Thank you.
Completely avoidable.
Article 15's up in front of the old man at Captain's Mass is what that is.
Any further questions for General Caldwell? Seeing none, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate that very much. Anybody else here to testify on Senate Bill 32? Now, the Senate has sent over several bills that have come over with, I'll say, no opposition and very strong vote counts, which we appreciate. But with that being said, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 32. And I will need to just briefly open up a work session, I believe, on Senate Joint Memorial 1. We'll open up a brief work session, Senate Joint Memorial 1. And the intent is we will carry that over to April 11th. So we'll carry over Senate Joint Memorial 1 to April 11th, and I will close the work session on Senate Joint Memorial 1. And we'll also do the same with Senate Bill 32. I believe these aren't, they're not complicated bills. I don't think they're huge asks or big lifts on our part. But I think giving ourselves a day or two to just look at these would be wise. So I will open up a brief work session on Senate Bill 32 for the purpose to carry that over till April 11th. So I'll carry Senate Bill 32 over to April 11th. And with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 32. Now, Ms. Edwards, thanks for keeping me straight on all that. Is there anything for the good of the order? Seeing nothing for the good of the order, this committee will stand adjourned. Thank you very much.